Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the program, we have stories from Alice Bryant and Brian Lynn. We also, as always, will hear an American short story. But first, Bruce Alpert and I report on some disappointing college admissions mix-ups. Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health recently emailed good news to 277 applicants. The emails said the Ivy League school is delighted to welcome the 277 applicants to its graduate program in public health. But less than 1 hour later, the applicants received another email saying the acceptance emails were sent by mistake. Julie Kornfeld is the Mailman School's Vice Dean for Education. She apologized for the mistake and said the school is working to make sure this mistake does not happen in the future. Kornfeld said the school regrets the stress and confusion caused by this mistake. This is far from the first time a college has sent out acceptance notices by mistake.
Last year, the State University of New York at Buffalo emailed 5,000 mistaken acceptance notices, the Buffalo News reported. The school quickly corrected the information. The applicants were told they were still being considered for admission, but that no final decision had been made. Time magazine keeps a list of colleges that mistakenly tell students they were accepted. In 2014, Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore sent out acceptance notices to 300 applicants, Time reported. That came as a surprise. Earlier, the students were told their applications had been rejected. The university quickly sent out another notice saying, regrettably, that the first rejection letter was correct.
Anna Ivey is a college admission advisor and a former college admissions officer. She said college officials live in fear of making a mistake on something as important as admission to a student's dream school. But college admissions require enough human data entry to produce mistakes, Ivy said. Though such mistakes happen maybe 1% of the time, Ivy said, it's a 100% failure rate for that applicant who gets the wrong letter. For many, a rejection letter from a college they had hoped to attend is the first big disappointment of their young lives. Sue Luce, like Ivy, is a college admission advisor. She advises students to apply to a mix of schools. She said it should include colleges they know are difficult to get into, but others that are more likely to accept them. Some schools are so selective, she said, that even the top students in their high school class are not guaranteed admission. Sometimes schools choose students with a talent the university needs. It could be that the school needs a quarterback for the football team, or they might need a tuba player, Luce said.
It is important for parents not to take rejection too hard, even when children are rejected from schools that they attended, Luce said. Parents should know it is more difficult to get into top colleges. It might be that when they went to that school, it accepted 30% of applicants, and now that percentage is down to 5%, she said. The College Board prepares college entrance exams. It offers this message to students and parents getting bad news from their first college choice. Officials at top colleges say two-thirds of the students they reject have the ability to succeed at their schools. Helping applicants understand they are among many smart people denied admission to top schools can help them better deal with rejection, the College Board said. Ivy, the college advisor, said students need a little time to get over being rejected by their top college choice. But then they need to get back to work and implement their Plan B, she said. By Plan B, she means considering other schools or applying to new schools still accepting applications.
The acceptance rates are very low at top schools. Stanford University in California reported that it turned down 95 of every 100 people who applied for admission to its current freshman class. The chances of getting in were not much better at other top schools, such as Harvard University in Massachusetts and Yale University in Connecticut. Columbia University, which recently sent out the mistaken acceptance notices, only admitted 6% of the 36,292 applicants for its 2016 freshman class. But there are schools that take in most applicants, and some that accept all students who apply. U.S. News and World Report said schools that accepted all applicants in 2015 included the Academy of Art University in San Francisco, California, California State University in Bakersfield, the College of Staten Island in New York City, and Herzing University in Wisconsin. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Bruce Albert.
Scientists in Mexico say they may have found a way to cut production of methane, a gas linked to rising temperatures on the Earth's surface. The scientists say their method may help reduce the methane released by cows, one of the main producers of the gas. When talking about global warming, many people think of carbon dioxide, another heat-trapping gas. Studies have shown that large amounts of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere reflect heat back to Earth, causing climate changes. Methane is an even more powerful heat-trapping gas. Cows are known to produce high levels of methane when they eat and process food. Farm animals are responsible for 44% of all human-caused methane, according to the Reuters News Service. Researchers at the Autonomous University of the State of Mexico are studying how a cow's diet affects the production of methane. The researchers are using a specially designed machine to measure the effect. Stephanie Hernandez is an assistant researcher at the university. She told VOA that approximately 95% of methane that is emitted by cattle is from breathing. The scientists use the machine to try to capture the animal's breathing to examine the methane released, she explained. Most of the gas is released when cows belch. The digestive bacteria in a cow's stomach causes the animal to expel the gas through its mouth. There are an estimated 1.3 to 1.5 billion cows in the world. Each animal releases as much as 120 kilograms of methane per year. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency reports that when measured in pounds, the effect of methane on climate change is more than 25 times greater than carbon dioxide over a 100-year period. In addition, a 2006 United Nations report found that raising cattle produces more greenhouse gases than cars and trucks combined. This includes not just gases released by the cattle, but the effect of related activities, such as clearing forests to raise the animals. Octavio Castellan is the head of the university's Cattle and Environment Laboratory. He told VOA, if we can reduce methane emissions, then we can rapidly reduce the effect on climate change. As it is difficult to capture the gas released by cows for use as energy, one way to lessen its release is to change their diet. Scientists in some countries are looking for ways to decrease cow methane, but, Castellan explained, while they are trying different plants and chemical compounds, those products would be too costly and difficult to bring to Mexico. The Mexican researchers have found two animal food sources offering promising results. Leaves from the leucaena tree and the flowers of the cosmos plant. Both plants grow in warm climates. The researchers found that cows who ate grass mixed with the leucaena leaves belched about 36% less methane than a diet of grass alone. The cosmos flower reduced these emissions by 26% when mixed with the animal's feed. In addition, the two plants do not have a harmful effect on milk and meat production. In fact, the researchers found that leucaena leaves improve the quality of cow milk. This can give Mexican farmers more reason to grow the plants and change their cattle's diet. I'm Alice Bryant.
The owner of technology company Google has reported progress in its plan to offer internet service to rural areas around the world. Google's parent company, Alphabet, calls the plan Project Loon. Its goal is to increase access to the billions of people currently without internet connectivity. Alphabet has no plans to use traditional wiring, which can be costly. Instead, the idea is to float huge balloons about 20 kilometers above the surface of the Earth. The balloons would act like telecommunications satellites, providing internet service to the rural areas. The huge objects would ride air currents to either stay in place or move to another position high in the skies. At first, the idea was to have a large number of balloons circling the planet. One balloon would move away from an area while another arrived to guarantee service in the affected areas. But Alphabet announced it has found a way to make balloons float over one area for an extended period. In a statement released online, the company said its software can now send small teams of balloons to form a cluster over a specific region where people need internet access. This is a shift from our original model, in which we planned to create rings of balloons sailing around the globe, and balloons would take turns moving through a region to provide service. The company said the discovery was made during tests of balloons launched from the island of Puerto Rico to float in Peruvian airspace. The company said some of the balloons stayed in the same area for as long as 3 months. The company said the discovery should speed up the project and reduce costs. "We'll reduce the number of balloons we need and get greater value out of each one." But Project Loon workers must still find ways to increase the life of the balloons. A British Broadcasting Corporation report says the longest service for a single balloon was 190 days. Google has also explored the idea of providing internet service to rural areas using solar-powered drone aircraft. But it canceled that project because of technological barriers and high costs. I'm Brian Lynn.
Now it's time for our program, American Stories. Here is part two of The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe.
Roderick Usher, whom I had known as a boy, was now ill and had asked me to come to help him. When I arrived, I felt something strange and fearful about the great old stone house, about the lake in front of it, and about Usher himself. He appeared not like a human being, but like a spirit that had come back from beyond the grave. It was an illness, he said, from which he would surely die. He called his sickness fear. "I have," he said, "no fear of pain, but only the fear of its result, of terror. I feel that the time will soon arrive when I must lose my life and my mind and my soul together in some last battle with that horrible enemy, fear." I learned also, but slowly and through broken words with doubtful meaning, another strange fact about the condition of Usher's mind. He had certain sick fears about the house in which he lived. and he had not stepped out of it for many years. He felt that the house, with its gray walls and the quiet lake around it, had somehow, through the long years, gotten a strong hold on his spirit. He said, however, that much of the gloom which lay so heavily on him was probably caused by something more plainly to be seen, by the long-continued illness, indeed the coming death, of a dearly loved sister, his only company for many years.
Except for himself,
she was the last member of his family on earth. "When she dies," he said, with a sadness which I can never forget, "when she dies, I will be the last of the old, old family, the house of Usher." While he spoke, the Lady Madeline, for so she was called, passed slowly through a distant part of the room, and without seeing that I was there, went on. I looked at her with a complete and wondering surprise, and with some fear. And yet I found I could not explain to myself such feelings. My eyes followed her. When she came to a door and it closed behind her, my eyes turned to the face of her brother. But he had put his face in his hands, and I could see only that the thin fingers through which his tears were flowing were whiter than ever before. The illness of the Lady Madeline had long been beyond the help of her doctors. She seemed to care about nothing. Slowly her body had grown thin and weak, and often for a short period she would fall into a sleep like the sleep of the dead. So far she had not been forced to stay in bed, but by the evening of the day I arrived at the house, the power of her destroyer, as her brother told me that night, was too strong for her. I learned that my one sight of her would probably be the last I would have, that the lady, at least while living, would be seen by me no more. For several days following, her name was not spoken by either Usher or myself, and during this period I was busy with efforts to lift my friend out of his sadness and gloom. We painted and read together, or listened as if in a dream to the wild music he played, and so, as a warmer and more loving friendship grew between us, I saw more clearly the uselessness of all attempts to bring happiness to a mind from which only darkness came, spreading upon all objects in the world its never-ending gloom. I shall always remember the hours I spent with the master of the House of Usher. Yet I would fail in any attempt to give an idea of the true character of the things we did together. There was a strange light over everything. The paintings which he made me tremble, though I know not why. To tell of them is beyond the power of written words. If ever a man painted an idea, that man was Roderick Usher. For me, at least, there came out of his pictures a sense of fear and wonder. One of these pictures may be told, although weakly, in words. It showed the inside of a room where the dead might be placed, with low walls, white and plain. It seemed to be very deep under the earth. There was no door, no window, and no light or fire burned. Yet a river of light flowed through it, filling it with a horrible, ghastly brightness. I have spoken of that sickly condition of the senses, which made most music painful for Usher to hear. The notes he could listen to with pleasure were very few. It was this fact, perhaps, that made the music he played so different from most music. But the wild beauty of his playing could not be explained. The words of one of his songs called The Haunted Palace I have easily remembered. In it I thought I saw, and for the first time, that Usher knew very well that his mind was weakening. This song told of a great house where a king lived, a palace, in a green valley, where all was light and color and beauty, and the air was sweet. In the palace were two bright windows through which people in the happy valley could hear music and could see smiling ghosts, spirits moving around the king. The palace door was of the richest material, in red and white. Through it came other spirits whose only duty was to sing in their beautiful voices about how wise their king was. But a dark change came, the song continued. And now those who enter the valley see through the windows in a red light shapes that move to broken music, while through the door, now colorless, a ghastly river of ghosts laughing, but no longer smiling, rushes out forever. Our talk of this song led to another strange idea in Usher's mind. He believed that plants could feel and think, and not only plants, but rocks and water as well. He believed that the gray stones of his house and the small plants growing on the stones and the decaying trees had a power over him that made him what he was. Our books, the books which for years had fed the sick man's mind, were, as might be supposed, of the same wild character. Some of these books Usher sat and studied for hours. His chief delight was found in reading one very old book, written for some forgotten church, telling of the watch over the dead. At last, one evening, he told me that the Lady Madeline was alive no more. He said he was going to keep her body for a time in one of the many vaults inside the walls of the building. The worldly reason he gave for this was one with which I felt I had to agree. He had decided to do this because of the nature of her illness, because of the strange interest and questions of her doctors, and because of the great distance to the graveyard where members of his family were placed in the earth. We, too, carried her body to its resting place. The vault in which we placed it was small and dark. In ages past it must have seen strange and bloody scenes. It lay deep below that part of the building where I myself slept. The thick door was of iron, and because of its great weight made a loud, hard sound when it was opened and closed. As we placed the Lady Madeline in this room of horror, I saw for the first time the great likeness between brother and sister, and Usher told me then that they were twins. They had been born on the same day. For that reason, the understanding between them had always been great, and the tie that held them together very strong. We looked down at the dead face one last time, and I was filled with wonder. As she lay there, the Lady Madeline looked not dead, but asleep, still soft and warm, though to the touch, cold as the stones around us.
For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for joining us.